Mom's gonna love this.
Yeah. And you know what? She deserves it. She's a great mom. Okay. What are we missing? We got the eggs, the juice, the muffins, got the bacon, cereal, oatmeal.
Dad, nobody likes oatmeal.
Hey, I know we got chocolates for your mom, but there was something else that she wanted for Mother's Day. What was it?
Was it a new Bible? Look how worn out that thing is. Dad, gotta start watching out for these things.
I bet it was a spa day.
Bet it was a new car.
Definitely not a new car.
She's basically my personal Uber driver. We could both use the upgrade.
No. Was it those fuzzy socks?
Dad, you get that for her every holiday. She has like 1,000 of them.
Is it one of those candles that she puts in our bedroom? Hold on. Why does she only put that on my side?
What was it she wanted for Mother's Day?
Oh.
Dad, I remember what Mom wants for Mother's Day.
What's that, buddy?
The sleigh bin!
Hey. Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day. We clearly owe you brunch after church.
What you owe me is a nap.
Yes. Yes, we do.
We're doing our best out here. We're trying. We're doing our best, right? Oh, my goodness. It can be challenging sometimes to know how exactly on these special days, especially on these sort of big occasions with people that we really care about, how do we sort of honor somebody and how do we make them feel special in our hearts, right? And I think about all of the ways that we try to do this and maybe in a less funny or dramatic way, right? We tend to maybe default to giving a gift or making breakfast or trying to make breakfast or maybe writing a letter. And perhaps, right, perhaps you're able to communicate through those means something of what you feel in your heart. But I think oftentimes we end up at the end of the day feeling like, man, I'm not sure if I communicated exactly the way that I felt. So how do we honor someone who is really important to us? Right? This morning, we went to get donuts, like we always go to get donuts. And this morning, it was a bit like walking into the gym in January, right? Like everybody on the other side of their New Year's resolutions is in the gym. They're at the Y. They're ready to go. There were so many people at the donut shop this morning, and I can only imagine it was part of the plan. I'm sure this wasn't last minute, right? Holding a child, holding another child, holding a hand, trying to get donuts before mom wakes up to get home to try and honor her. I think we have this desire, perhaps, right? We have this intuition. Especially around Mother's Day and Father's Day, Veterans Day, these sorts of really big days, these things, these people who really serve us in a special and unique way. We want to try and honor them. And that was no different than for the people. That was no different for the church, right, in the ancient world, the beginning of the church. They wanted to try and understand this dynamic of honoring, and how do we honor each other? How do we honor Christ? And the biblical imagination really does shine some great wisdom around this word, honor. It's one that the writers use a lot, right? We heard it in our passage from 1 Peter here in chapter 3, and we're going to kind of sit in verses 14 and 15 today, but this idea, have no fear of them. Peter is telling the churches, nor be troubled, but in your hearts honor Christ the Lord as holy. And we heard it differently in the New International Version translation that Tracy read. It wasn't honor. Do you remember what it was? You're going to look it up. No, it's okay. I can. Right? It was revere, right? And this idea of honoring Christ. In the Greek, it's neither of those words. The word agaizo And it simply means to set something aside, to dedicate it as holy, as special, right? And that's really the first, I think, part of honoring someone well, right? And to us, I think this maybe sounds fairly normal, to honor Christ as Lord. This is what we try to do every day, and we come around this concept then every Sunday to sort of help center us around this idea of honoring Christ as the Lord, the King of our life. But this would have been revolutionary. This would have been maybe worthy even of death in the first century in the ancient world, right? Remember, by the time that Jesus is resurrected and ascends to heaven, the Roman Empire has been ruling over Israel, Palestine for about 16 years. And by the time we think Peter is sort of talking and writing these letters, they've been in power for you know, potentially like 80 years, 60 years, something like that. And I'm not a Roman history expert by any means, but Roman culture, what we understand, it was inescapable, right? It was a ubiquitous reality. On the surface, the Roman Empire brought really, really good things. They brought the court system and infrastructure. They brought economic unity through roads and a navy that allowed people to use the Mediterranean like kind of a highway for goods. Lots of really good things. But there was a dark side to Rome's peace that we shouldn't forget about, right? The Romans established and maintained their empire through conquest, through subjugation, through intimidation, right? It was, in other words, it was peace through war, right? Security via domination. The Romans invaded people groups and enslaved them. They imposed taxes and tributes to maintain their empire and its so-called peace. And anyone who threatened that peace could face the consequences that we saw Jesus face of crucifixion. So then imagine how this announcement of the apostles would sound in this context, right? People are going around saying that there is another king, there's another emperor, right? Jesus. And instead of setting the emperor of Rome apart as holy, they are setting Jesus apart as holy. They are honoring Christ, not the emperor. But they don't stop there, right? They start these communities where everybody calls each other brother and sister. And they begin to share all of their stuff. They want to make sure that everybody in the community has what they need. We heard last week about how the early church set apart certain people to make sure that the widows and the orphans had food. It was that detailed. It was that particular to make sure that everyone had their needs met, to take care of the poor, those who had need. And the gift of being included in this family, in this community of God, is given without regard to someone's placement on this sort of power and sort of rank scale that was so common in that culture, right? And this is why we see, even in 1 Peter last week where we were talking about this, where we'll see slave owners and slaves together in community, right? We'll see orphans and wealthy merchants together with like a tradesman, like a tent maker. And they're all coming together around Christ and around these sacraments of baptism and Holy Communion and the public reading of God's word and the singing of psalms, the way that they begin to place equal value on every person, right, as they practice their faith. And the reason they were able to be so radical is what they believed the gospel was telling them, is that every person has divine value as an image of God. So this maybe is our first kind of takeaway principle, that when we're trying to honor somebody, honor refers to the recognition of a person's divine value as an image of God, not based on what they can provide for us, not based on their status or positioning in the community, but based on the way that God views them. Every single person is a person for whom Jesus died. Right in verse 18 in the same chapter, "For Christ also suffered once for sins, the righteous for the unrighteous, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but made alive in the Spirit." And we receive this gift through baptism. The Spirit that speaks through us and lives in us. Right? That's what gives you your ultimate value. Your value is defined by your Creator and what your Creator has done for you in Jesus. Right? So that's the first part, perhaps, if we're trying to understand how can we honor somebody. But there's a second part, there's a second aspect of this that comes in 1 Peter in those verses as well, if we just sort of keep reading, right? So he says, "Have no fear of them, nor be troubled, but in your hearts honor Christ the Lord as holy," always being prepared to make a defense for anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you. Yet do this with gentleness and respect. So that word defense then in the Greek is the word apologia. And we have, this is where we get apologetics. We had a whole study for several weeks over the winter where we were thinking about how can we defend or talk about the Christian faith in a world perhaps that is becoming antagonistic even towards it. And it's a good translation. This idea of defense is a really good translation, but it also has kind of this connotation of making an excuse for something, right? Or explaining the circumstances of this. I think the technical Greek term is what had happened was, right? So there's dad standing in line at the donut shop on Mother's Day, right, at 7:30, and they're looking a little rough, and maybe they're wearing the t-shirt that they slept in. And if you look at them, right, they're going, what had happened was, I tried, I wanted to have a plan, and then things happen, and, right? We know this impulse to make excuses or to sort of justify the circumstances. Hey, I really tried my best, and you can't see behind the scenes, but so let me sort of help you understand the larger context. And we do this all the time, right? But we usually do it for ourselves, right? I'm late, and I was rude, and I gave a poor performance, but let me help you understand why you should still think highly of me, right? Right? And so what if we did that same thing for the hope that we have in Jesus? You see, part of honoring someone important is helping others understand the circumstances of their day, the circumstances of their week, maybe even their life, to look empathetically at the people around us and to try and place ourselves in their shoes and understand, perhaps, even as children, what was happening in our parents' lives? What were they coming out of? Can I paint their circumstances with the best light? And 1 Corinthians 13 says this very clearly. It says, love always assumes the best. Right? This is what Paul is doing then in Athens, right? Day by day, reasoning with those who happen to be there, giving a defense, giving the circumstances that surrounded the life of Jesus. I see in every way you're very religious, but you have this one statue to an unknown God. Let me explain to you what that unknown God is, right? Who that unknown God is meant to encompass or honor. Right? See, honor refers to the recognition of a person's divine value as an image of God, but it also refers to this ongoing attribution of esteem. Right? By not themselves, but by one's peers and family and social class and city and so on and so on and so on. Right? To honor someone in the biblical imagination is to give them esteem, to elevate their status, to make them bigger in the eyes of the people around them. Right? We're very familiar in our culture today with this idea of self-esteem and the way that we feel about ourselves based on what I think or believe is true about myself. So in that context, right, in that framework, we're not talking about self-esteem. We're talking about group esteem. We're talking about the way that a particular group of people feel about someone, right? What does the group think? And so perhaps if you're asking yourself, how can we honor someone important, a good question there is how can I build up the esteem of this person day by day in the groups that they're a part of, whether it be a family or at work, right, or in the community? How instead of cutting down, how can I help to build a person up? And so in Proverbs 31, there's this great sort of exposition, these beautiful words on being a woman and what it means to be a mother and to be a wife, and this woman of character is kind of imagined and sort of the words in there. I would love to encourage you to go read the kind of the whole psalm, but this is what one verse that really sticks out to me today. It says, honor her for all that her hands have done, and let her works bring her praise at the city gate. This isn't something that happens behind the scenes at the kitchen table. This is something that happens at the city gates. Honoring somebody in a public way, in the presence of groups that they love and that they're a part of, this is what we do on this day, especially for mothers, but when we try to honor anyone, right, we're building them up. Right? So today, we're trying to recognize how our mothers and our grandmothers are children of God. They have infinite value to their Creator because of what Christ has done for them. And in some way, we are trying to build up your name to try and make you bigger, right, in this place. Right? We're trying to elevate your status today. And so we're going to try and do that, right? Not just with our words, we're going to try and do that with our actions as well. And so we have prepared some flowers in the back. And so if you are a child, I know you had to stay in worship today. There was no video or Sunday school. So you're here for a reason. This is the reason. So we want you to go back and we want you to get flowers and hand out the flowers. Start with your own mother, okay? And then, it's really important. Start with your own mother. And then work your way around and make sure that every woman in here has a flower. And as we do this, I really do hope that you feel that sense of honor that we want to try and bestow on you, not just today, but every day, for the amazing works that you have done and for the person that you are in this space. All right, so as we do that, we're going to gather our offering. We're going to do two things at once, and we have a video, again, to try and help honor our mothers as we do this work, okay? Okay.